Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political left, Shireen Gourbani.
Hello and hi, listeners. Special shout out to Senator Todd Weiler, who I got to see today.
Ah, wonderful. And John Dougal, the state auditor on the right.
Happy spring, everyone. Good to be with you.
Isn't it something?
It's amazing. We go from where I lived, the biggest snowstorm of the season, to 2 days later, it's a beautiful spring.
Yeah, it's something. At the Gardner Institute yesterday, we had some bill signings. Governor was in the House, legislative leaders, lieutenant governor. But the energy for a Monday was unbelievable. And I know it's because of the sunshine. Just there was a vibe. You know, and I'm a big four-season person.
Oh, yeah.
Shireen. I love wintertime, but it is interesting how the sun just envelops you.
Yeah. I'm a little bit of a lizard. As soon as it happened, I was like, I got to get out there. I got to be in the sun. Now that we've had a couple of days of it, it certainly improved my mood, but I don't feel the need to just be out sunning myself.
Yeah. Well, on the theme of shedding light, we had light shed this week on some Clarence Thomas. What would we say?
Well, I would say corruption, but I'm curious how other people want to talk about it.
Apparently, Senator Lee doesn't see it that way. But John, tell us what went public in the last week about Justice Clarence Thomas.
So there was a ProPublica article talking about Clarence Thomas taking lavish trips with a real estate developer, Harlan Crow, and stuff like that. And his story is, you know, family friend and close personal relationship, doesn't have issues before the court. This was legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I followed the rules and rules just recently changed. Now we'll follow the new rules and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I get the dynamic, which is it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what position you are in government. This type of behavior just looks bad.
Yeah. Okay. So Shireen, there's a big Utah angle here about his donations to Utahns.
Yeah.
I'm showing that Crow's financial support accounted for just over 47% of all donations to Utahns.
Yeah.
That's a lot of involvement for someone I've never heard of.
It's a lot of involvement. And I do think it would be a good reason for us to seriously consider campaign finance reform, but we'll save that for another day. But I think...
Yeah. What's your read on the news about these vacations and...
Yeah, so my read is that when we have, somebody on the highest court in this land taking $500,000 yacht vacations, island hopping around Indonesia.
I didn't know it was so cheap.
Yeah, spending numerous, hours on this person's private jet. This is behavior that Clarence Thomas has been identified for before. He was once called out in the New York Times, I want to say it was almost 15 years ago, maybe more, for his acceptance of gifts. The rules have not actually changed, and there was a small clarification. But basically, to say this is a close personal friend, I've had this friend for 20 years, does not account for the fact that you made this friend after you were on the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And to suggest that you are not, influenced by that person's generosity to me is absolute rubbish. I just can't believe that anyone would hear that and believe it. So what I hope people understand here is that we've got, I think, some real ethics considerations and concerns when it comes to the highest court in our land. But also, I think there's some real ethical questions across the entire judiciary.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we should note that this Harlan Crow also made a campaign mostly to Republicans, but he did donate to Ben McAdams' campaign in 2019. But the real, John and Shireen, the real big, ticket item here is his co-founding of Club for Growth. And Shireen was quick to remind me that a lot of those Evan McMullen things that came that
anti-Evan McMullen.
Yeah, made him look like a shady character. Those were coming from Club for Growth. It's a political action committee that spent more than $5.4 million boosting Senator Lee's campaign in 2022. So that's a lot bigger than the campaign donations, John.
Yeah. But going back to what Shireen said, I think we've known, Justice Thomas's political leanings for decades. And I don't think there's been any kind of change as a result of his relationship here with Harlan Crow. So it's not like he got influence and it's altered his position. I think his position has been what his position has been for decades. Now, you may complain about that position, but he's been consistent in his conservative position.
Right. Well, what I remember is people on the right repeatedly saying that we don't want our judges to be activist judges. And I think we have two examples today that suggest that that is exactly what's happening on the far right in the judiciary in our state, in our country.
Well, there'll be more to come here. Let's go to Tennessee.
Okay.
Tennessee has Republicans who voted to expel two Democratic representatives?
Two of three.
They
had three that they voted on, two they expelled.
Justin Jones and Justin Pearson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of them's been reinstated temporarily until the final vote happens.
And but when we're recording, we're hearing that the other one is likely going to get reinstated as well.
All right. So let's just think about this for a minute. I've watched the interviews of the two Justins, and they're compelling individuals. They're articulate. They represent their point of view very well. They strike me as people that aren't going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Is that right?
Yeah, and I think it's important to also note that the Tennessee legislature has really not expelled a lot of members. And in recent times, those people were expelled for breaking the law, so accepting a bribe, severe allegations of sexual misconduct. Mm-hmm. These individuals, I'm going to forget her name, but her first name is Gloria. The three representatives that were up for a vote for expulsion, and to be clear, the representative who survived that vote is an older white woman, a Democrat, but an older white woman. And when she was asked, "What is the difference here between you and your colleagues?" she said, "I have to assume it might have to do with the color of my skin."
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kudos to her for saying it like it is, right? But I think that there's a real question here about when somebody, you know, violates a norm of conduct versus breaking
the law.
Yeah. And really, this situation, as you're suggesting, has given them a platform that they did not have before this incident.
And money. And
mm-hmm.
national prestige.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I got to say, I feel like
they probably have the moral high ground.
That's right.
John, you have served in the legislature. I'm assuming during your legislative service you had some times when members of the House were disciplined. Is that right?
Yeah, there were certain, if you will, sanctions or other things mm-hmm. like that.
I just am remembering some of these.
Pretty minor, all things considered.
Tell us what is it like?
But we did not have a situation like this.
Mm-hmm.
And as I understand this situation, we had two of these members in the well of the House chamber with bullhorns leading a protest
mm-hmm.
of folks in the gallery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is completely inappropriate in mm-hmm. this kind of setting. The, mm-hmm. the decorum rules are generally pretty strict about mm-hmm. what is and isn't acceptable behavior on the floor.
But to be clear, they did that after they had their microphones shut off numerous times after asking to speak.
What they were speaking about was not germane to the issue before them. That is by definition out of order. And so I look at that and say, okay, clearly Tennessee was dealing with some, I'll just describe it as rambunctious individuals, passionate about their issue, which were violating the rules of decorum. And they had been warned and warned, and clearly the Republican majority did not know.
Supermajority,
okay. Did not know how best to address this. And this is a difficult issue because usually
in Utah,
it's like, okay, you're out of order. Oh, okay. Sorry. And things continue, and that correction is pretty minor and pretty quick, and you correct your behavior. And if you're going to speak on
expulsion versus some sort of discipline would have been my track.
That's right.
Yeah. And it seems like they escalated it really quick, and as a result of their escalation, I don't think these guys were harmed at all. In fact, I think they inadvertently were significantly benefited. As we talked about, attention, dollars, so forth. They're going to be – one's reinstated. The other one will likely be reinstated, and that's the nature. And also, they got reinstated. It wasn't like we kicked you out, you're out. No, the rules are such that if they get reappointed, then they're back in.
Right. I just want to be clear. What Representative Justin Jones said was that they wanted to talk about an assault weapons ban, which is what numerous people had come to the Capitol asking for in the wake of a shooting. There's now been another one in Tennessee as well, right? So, I think we're up to 150 mass shootings in this country already this year. So this is an issue that is critically important to many young voters, many who feel disenfranchised by the way politics are working in their state and across many states. And what he said was, we tried to ban assault weapons and they assaulted democracy. And I do think it was a misstep. It was an overreach of power. And I think that they're going to suffer some consequences for it.
But it was also completely inappropriate for these two individuals the way they went about it. And I know some are trying to make an issue about race. But the difference between these three is two of them had a megaphone leading the chants, and the other one did not have a megaphone leading the protest.
Mm-hmm. What a mess, though.
Look and say, this is just not the way you go about that.
Yeah, what a mess. Hey, so we also have this crazy opposing rulings from Texas and Washington State on the FDA approval of the drug mifepristone.
Mifepristone.
Come on, doctor.
This, wow.
A drug that was approved by the FDA, what, over two decades ago?
23 years ago.
It's stunning to me. Go read the book, A Time to Build by Yuval Levin, but it's about institutions and their decline in this country. And he writes it two or three years ago. And boy, is it playing out exactly as he sort of described, that our institutions are not being trusted. And so here the institution to me is the FDA.
Yeah. So basically what this judge ruled is, contrary to quite a bit of evidence, it sets up a pretty shaky and I think really we talk about sometimes novel thinking. This certainly feels like novel thinking. Over 5 million women, usually women, have taken mifepristone as a drug that is the medication abortion. Okay, this was approved 23 years ago, as you suggested. There was not a change in data that suggested this was dangerous. There was not a rash of incidents that pulled it into the limelight, other than an activist judge who was intentionally put there with a group that intentionally formed in his jurisdiction to be able to advance this issue.
And which is another institution, meaning when you say an activist judge, the judiciary, the court, are an institution in this country, and just the term activist judge shows decline.
It shows decline. I totally agree.
Let me throw in one thing to your point. I think what you're also trying to highlight is forum shopping.
Yes, forum shopping.
This is something that people do, is they try and look and say, is there a judge in a certain forum that's going to be more favorable to my cause? I'm going to try and bring the case there if I can.
Right. Mm-hmm. So what he ruled is that they were wrong to approve it because there was not enough evidence that mifepristone was a safe drug, right? So there's not evidence to support what he is saying. And I do think this should be concerning for anyone. If we're thinking about birth control, we're thinking about HIV protection, PrEP, we're thinking about maybe this is a judge that disagrees with vaccines. Where is the logical end to what this individual has set up and what kind of chaos this can create where people are simply trying to access healthcare? This is absolutely bonkers to me.
The thought of a Food and Drug Administration by state, that really bothers me. I think certain standards.
The FDA in and of itself bothers me, but that's a whole different matter.
All right.
I understand. But you have some legal expertise, John. How do you reconcile? Well, this is uncharted territory, as I understand it. What's going to happen next?
Well, this isn't uncharted because we deal with these kind of issues all across the board.
When is the last time a judge disapproved a drug? That hasn't happened.
Just a sec. What's going on right now is, the concern isn't really about the drug. It's about potentially the nationwide moratorium, and that a judge in Texas could create a moratorium nationwide. Now, we had some, quote unquote, Obama-appointed judges over the last several years who were trying to do things, national moratoriums on different things and putting injunctions and embargoes in place, so forth. That clearly is a concern because, okay, your ruling should be pertinent to what's going on in Texas and not this nationwide kind of thing. Now, we do have a process. This judge ruled it can go on appeals, just like the judge in Washington. You've got questions about standing, whether people truly had a legitimate interest that was being harmed that allowed them to be before the court, in my understanding, in both of these suits. And so, you know, you're going to have questions about that. It's going to ripple up to the appellate level. Folks there are going to decide it. If there's still conflicting things, then it will most likely end up at the Supreme Court, and we'll see those kind of dynamics. And as people say, you know, the Supreme Court, whether it's in Utah or D.C., you know, they're not last because they're right. They're right because they're last. They have the final say, and we have this process. But one of the other things that causes me concern is when I see especially various Democratic representatives. I mean, Ron Wyden, a senator out of Oregon, saying the FDA and the Obama administration should just ignore it. We have a certain process to work through this.
And we also have a process for drug approvals.
And I hear those dynamics that it give me shades of Trump with the whole election dynamic. We're just going to deny it. We're going to do our own thing. And we're going to ignore the rule of law. We're going to ignore certain processes and other things like that.
But I just have to say, though, that the chaos that we're living in is the result of fairly extremist views on access to reproductive health care. For Utahns, if you're listening and you need access to abortion care, it is still legal up to 18 weeks in the state. Of course, that can change at any moment. But if you need care, please seek it.
I'm going to say this is a broader issue than just this one topic of abortion.
That's right.
We're going to take a break on this lively conversation. John Dougal, Shereen Gurbani, Natalie Gochner. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Wow, what a lively first segment we have. Thanks to both of you for your understanding of these issues and just the details that you can go into. I'm in awe. You guys are great.
Well, thank you.
We try to do our homework for the listeners.
I'm glad I'm in the political middle because all I need to do is just kind of, no, that doesn't make sense. That does. I'll pull that over. I don't need to know anything. I just need to pull the, I just need wisdom. Oh,
okay, but you do know a lot. What are you working on this week, Natalie?
Well, I could use your help. I'm giving a presentation about the new Utah.
Really? We only got 10 minutes left.
Okay, well, I've come to the conclusion and have the evidence to suggest that Utah hit an inflection point and that we've hit a turning point and we're different than we were. Mm. Now, you're always evolving and changing, but real quickly, what? We went from a small state to a mid-sized state, I believe, in the 2020 census. We jumped four states, put us into that middle quadrant. We have definitely become a multicultural state. 25% racial ethnic minorities. That's big. Used to be 10 in my lifetime. It's 25 now, and we'll be a third, you know, shortly. We're getting older.
And we're getting older because?
Because our fertility rate's declining like crazy.
And we have a lot of move-ins that are
kids. The other thing is we used to get two-thirds of our growth from ourselves. For the last 2 years, we've gotten two-thirds of our growth from the outside, people moving into the state. And then lastly, our economy, I think, in the last 10, 12 years, especially if I look at the COVID success of our state, we blew everyone away. Our economy is premier. And that's really good news because it helps you with the other things that are the new Utah. So with laying that out, any questions about those conclusions or even broader, what does it mean? What do you do? That's the advice I could get from my policy friends here.
Well, something that I think about a lot, of course, is the need for infrastructure. And so this is kind of going back to my experience on the county council. But when I think about just the headaches that people have around, I think a lag in meeting the demands that people have for road infrastructure, for, you know, potentially rail infrastructure, public transit, those are some of the big things that I think about and how that ripples into not just kind of the everyday business of life, but also our recreation. I think about the stats around visits to our state and national parks. Like, there's a huge need for infrastructure to support the influx that we have around those activities as well.
Yeah. John, when I present something like this, so, you know, I lead a public policy institute, you see a lot. And then you go share that with decision makers. You take, you know, research and put it into action. And you manage that sort of connection, right? I find it's helpful when I talk to policymakers that I don't tell them what to do. They were elected. They're experts. They hear and see so much. But I often find it helpful to just tell them some of the approaches that I would consider or a way that I would think about things. Rather than saying, oh, you need to do this. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. No, so, I can see that.
Yeah. So one of my main things I want to say is keep an open mind. That whatever you were thinking that led you to where you are today, be open to different and new ideas because we have a different Utah. Your reaction to that?
One of the things that I'd probably tell legislators and elected officials is be careful of hubris. Because oftentimes if you see success, you think it's because of what you did. And my experience in government is
I love that.
Elected officials are more likely to screw things up than to make things better. And so therefore, be humble and empower the people to solve their problems without you trying to think you're smarter than
everybody
else.
I love that. I have a word for that. I learned it from a colleague many years ago, but don't sniff your own fumes. Is another way of saying
the way I've heard
get
it,
high
don't,
on your own supply.
Don't read your own press.
Yeah.
Look at what you did 2 decades after you did it to see.
Shireen, what about you? When you think of these challenges, if you were just giving some things, I've got a quote that I find really interesting. It's a Mack Wilberg quote. Now, do you know who Mack is, Shireen?
I feel like I'm not placing it, but
he leads the Tabernacle Choir at Temple Square.
Yeah.
He's a musical genius.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got an incredible reputation for what he's able to do. He said that the key to succeeding in the choir is to listen louder than you sing. Mm-hmm. It's really profound. Because you think that your deal is to project your voice. But actually, if you're singing louder than the person next to you, that's not good. Or if you're singing quieter, than the person next to you, that's not good. Or if you're not harmonizing. Anyway, I think it really applies here because I think people need to have an open mind and they need to listen more.
Yeah, I think that's right. I also think some of our challenges are going to become more complex, right?
Yeah, that's part of being a medium-sized state,
right? Yeah. And it feels like to me, you know, I still believe that if we wanted to really tackle poverty in the state, we could. Mm-hmm. If we wanted to really end homelessness for children and veterans and actually everyone in the state, we could. The population is still small enough that if we wanted to do that, we could.
And just to make it even more real, like in California, it's probably a pretty heavy lift.
Heavy lift.
Yeah.
But we could still do it.
We could still get our hands around things.
But that becomes more and more out of reach the faster we grow, right? And the longer we put off the investments that are critical now.
Yeah. John, what are you hearing in that? Because if you're telling people, okay, have an open mind, be humble, listen more, is that a message that elected leaders would be receptive to?
It will be for some and others. It will be a hard thing because you're elected to do something.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes hard to get out of the way. And it's sometimes hard to recognize, gee, I'm doing what was always done in the past, which may not work. I mean, you've heard me complain about transit over the years. Unfortunately, we seem to be building the transit of decades ago rather than being smart about our infrastructure in the future. What do we need in the future versus, well, gee, we've done this in the past. Let's keep doing more of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also think representation is a question here, right? Like as we see a changing Utah, what does it mean to look to our elected bodies at the county level, at the city level, at the state level, and not really see a reflection of what a changing population looks like? And I can think of, you know, lots of implications for that. Certainly, some of the more extremist legislation that we saw brought forward this year, I think is out of touch with where a lot of Utahns are.
I make an interesting point here that as you diversify and change and grow rapidly, the effects of redistricting or gerrymandering get harder and harder, because you, at some point you have to be who you are.
Yeah.
One of the other things—
Like Salt Lake County will have maybe a Democrat in Congress.
No, one of the things I was also going to mention is, and I see this in my little city when people move from the big cities like Sandy and Orem, and they start wondering where, you know, the rec center is and these parks and, you know, pickleball courts and everything else like that. And it's like, yeah, we don't have those.
Yeah, because we didn't invest in them.
And they complain they're leaving places because they're too busy wanting to come to a place that's quieter and then to recreate what they used to have.
Yeah,
and I see that of folks that are coming from other states coming to Utah. They left California because they didn't like the politics or whatever it might be, or they like the beauty here. And all of a sudden they change it, forget why they left, bring what I describe sometimes as those bad habits here, which then—
Yeah.
The bad habits of wanting pickleball in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
John and Shireen in that order.
No, it's the bad habit of wanting somebody else to pay for the pickleball court you want.
Yeah. You know, people call that infrastructure.
John, if there was an investment that you could make to help Utah, you know, prosper in this new Utah framework, what would that investment be?
Can I give two?
Yeah, sure.
I would deregulate more.
Okay.
Cut down the regulations, whether it comes to, you know, building homes and other things like that, and cutting down when it comes to occupations, and then I would reduce taxes.
You are so funny because neither of those are really investments. Those are policy decisions.
No, those are absolutely—
Investments of
those
time.
Those are investments in people. That says, I trust the people over the government. That is the investment.
I would just like to say again that the world of deregulation is the world that we live in, where trains are just like careening off of tracks constantly and we're having like huge amounts of baby formula tainted because of deregulation. But okay, so I would say that there are some—
You're
I kind of want
to
go back.
Bank closures? No. That's we got lots of regulation. We got lots of regulations for trains and banks and other things.
I want to go back to, I think there is an opportunity still to invest in those kind of core things around quality of life. And I am joking a little bit about the pickleball situation, but I do think that when you are in communities that have shared public goods, what that does is create an environment for where more people have access to those kinds of resources, to opportunities to build community for success. And that, for me, is everything from roads, transit, like all of these kinds of hard infrastructure pieces that we think about that work well. But it's also things like community centers and parks and ways that we're protecting and saving some of the most beautiful land that we have.
And this is why Shireen lives in Salt Lake County and I live in Utah County.
Yeah, but the middle gets a voice here.
Let's hear it.
I think I would be in roads, transit, active transportation.
Housing.
Yeah, and I think I would be in disadvantaged neighborhoods, which is something similar to you. I just think the neighborhood is a unit of improvement where we need to invest more. And I've said it before, but, you know, it's 10 years different lifespan between Foothill and Glendale. That's unacceptable. Shireen, but you mentioned housing.
Yeah. So what? How do you see housing playing into that?
Tricky, because it's hard to know what government does in housing. It's government has a clear role in infrastructure. It's harder for me. Like, you know, public housing is not something I'm real high on.
Yeah. Well, what about for seniors?
Yeah, we could make something there.
Yeah, aging populations. Sure.
We are out of time, but what a great discussion. Thanks, everybody. John Dougal, Shireen Gourbani, and Natalie Gochner. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.